Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Govardhana Kijai. Vrindavan Dhamma Kijai. Mathura Dhamma Kijai. Navajit Maya Purdhamma Kijai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Kijai. Gangamai Jumuna Devi Kijai. Bhakti Devi Kijai. Tulsi Maharani Kijai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Kijai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Nirvanga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada, the Mahatma Rishikadaya, Krishna Prasthana Pujalaya, Sri Mati Bhakti Nanda Swami Chinamani, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gaur Mani Vacharani, Nirvase Sasanavada Paskacharya Satarani. Vandenam Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamam Shri Guru Vaishnavas Chana Shri Rupam Sagar Jatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Stam Panchakapacha Vishakya Vasandhya Vitapta Chana Pavana Yoga Vaishnavya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 February 18th, 2015, in New Govardhana, Wollongong, Australia. Reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text 7. Karpanya dosa pahata swabhava. Vrichami tvam dharma samudha cheta. Yakshesham nischitam bruhitane. Shishyasteham sarimam tvam prapanam.
Shishyasteham sarimam tvam prapanam.
Please chant.
Karpanya dosho bahata svabhava. Shami tvam dharma samudha chita. Rashtreya shanishtam ruhitam me. Sishaste ham sari mam tam prapana. Karpan dosho bahata svabhava. Shami tvam dharma samudha cheta.
Shami tvam dharma samudha cheta.
Yachtre ashanishtitam bruhitan me.
Yachtre
ashanishtitam bruhitan me. Sishyastiham sarimam tvam prapana.
Sishyastiham sarimam.
Karpanya.
Karpanya.
Of miserliness.
of miserliness.
Dosha.
Dosha.
By the weakness.
By the weakness.
Upahata.
Upahata.
Being afflicted.
Being afflicted.
Swabhavaha.
Swabhavaha.
Characteristics.
Characteristics.
Pichami.
Pichami.
I am asking.
I am asking.
Twam.
Twam.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Dharma.
Dharma.
Religion.
Religion.
Samudha.
Samudha.
Bewildered.
Bewildered.
Chetaha.
Chetaha.
In heart.
In heart.
Yat.
Yat.
What.
What.
Shreyaha.
Shreyaha.
All good.
All good.
Syat.
Syat.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Nishchitam.
Nishchitam.
Confidently.
Confidently.
Ruhi.
Ruhi.
Tell.
Tell.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
May.
May.
Unto me.
Unto me.
Shishyaha.
Shishyaha.
Disciple.
Disciple.
Te.
Your.
Your. Aham.
Aham.
I am.
I am.
Shanti.
Sahi.
Just instruct.
Just instruct.
Mam.
Mam.
May.
May.
Twam.
Twam.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Prapanam.
Prapanam.
Surrendered.
Surrendered.
Translation. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Purport. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step, there is a perplexity, and therefore behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. Does that mean if you have a bona fide spiritual master that you know how to speak in Hungarian? Is that what it means? No. What does it mean by everything?
Does it mean everything about the goal of life?
Yes, how the universe works. I know everything about the goal of life, who you are, how the universe works. It doesn't necessarily mean you know how to plant corn, right? You know how to speak Mandarin or something like that. One should not, therefore, remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. Who is the man in material perplexities? It is he who does not understand the problems of life. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8.10, the perplexed man is described as follows. Yova etad aksharam garyavis avid its vatsmal lokat praiti sa kripana. He is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life as a human, and who thus quits this world like the cats and dogs, without understanding the science of self-realization. This human form of life is the most valuable asset for the living entity who can utilize it for solving the problems of life. Therefore, one who does not utilize this opportunity properly is a miser. On the other hand, there is the Brahmana, or he who is intelligent enough to utilize this body to solve all the problems of life. Yad etat aksharam gargi vidits vasmal lokat praiti sa brahmana. The kripanas, or miserly persons, waste their time in being overly affectionate for family, society, country, etc., in the material conception of life. One is often attached to family life, namely to wife, children, and other members, on the basis of, quote, skin disease, unquote. The kripana thinks that he is able to protect, this is interesting, a proper Christus. The kripana thinks that he is able to protect his family members from death, or the kripana thinks that his family or society can save him from the verge of death. So in other words, the kripana thinks, I'm going to be Krishna for my family, or my family's going to be Krishna for me. I'm going to be the shelter for my family, or they're going to be my shelter. Such family attachment can be found even in the lower animals who take care of children also. Being intelligent, Arjuna can understand that his affection for family members and his wish to protect them from death were the causes of his perplexities. Although he could understand that his duty to fight was awaiting him, still, on account of miserly weakness, he could not discharge the duties. He is therefore asking Lord Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, to make a definite solution. He offers himself to Krishna as a disciple. He wants to stop friendly talks. Talks between the master and the disciple are serious. And now Arjuna wants to talk very seriously before the recognized spiritual master. Krishna is therefore the original spiritual master of the science of Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna is the first disciple for understanding the Gita. How Arjuna understood the Bhagavad Gita is stated in the Gita itself. And yet foolish mundane scholars explain that one need not submit to Krishna as a person, but to the, quote, unborn within Krishna, unquote. There is no difference between Krishna's within and without, and one who has no sense of this understanding is the greatest fool in trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Parapanya dosha pahata pahata svabhava pracham mitram dharma samuda chetaha yat shreya shyan nishtitam bhuvitam me shishyasteham sadimam cham kripanam. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So all of us conditioned souls are in a problem of perplexity that we don't know here. What is our shreya? What is our ultimate good? Often we don't even know what is our prayer. What is our immediate good? Right? There's prayas and shreyas. Prayas is what's good for me in the next 5 minutes. And shreyas, you leave it, prayas is like playing, like a child playing. The child is playing with something dangerous and it's fun, but it's not going to, it may hurt them. And shreyas is the long-term good. So we don't really know. And we don't know what's good for us. We get so much conflicting advice, right? So at one time everybody says milk is good, then they say no, milk is not good. Right? This is good, no, it's not good. What is the cultural mores and change from one generation to the next? So in one generation, you're supposed to beat your child or else they won't turn out right. In another generation, if you beat your child, you go to jail. Isn't it? What's good at one time in one society is bad at another time in another society. We really don't know what to do. I mean, even in our normal daily life, people don't know, should I marry or not? Should I get married to this person or that person? Should I have this job or that job? Should I live at home? Should I live in the ashram? Should I be a pujari? Should I be a book distributor? Even in our Krishna consciousness, what's going to be the best for me? I mean, this is the kind of questions people ask over and over and over again. What will be the best for me? How will I become happy? Where will I attain the ultimate good? And even if Prabhupada says something quite interesting in this case, he said that Arjuna knows. He said, although he can understand his duty was to fight, his duty to fight was awaiting him, still on account of miserly weakness, he could not discharge the duties. So sometimes we just don't have any idea what to do. And other times we know what to do, but we feel too weak to do it. You know, they teach you in counseling that generally, people already know what the solution is for their problems. It's just a question of asking the right questions. You just ask them the right questions, and probably 90-95% of the time, they already know the answer. But the people are hesitating. Well, if I do that, this bad thing might happen, that I'm too difficult, and what about this, and what about that? Even though they know what the right course of action is. Like one question we ask in counseling is, if you had a best friend in this situation, what would you tell them to do? And often immediately somebody goes, I'd tell them, don't marry this person. Right? But they're like, I had one friend, she had fallen in love with this boy when she was very young, and it was a very tumultuous relationship. You know, it would be on again, off again, on again, off again. And she'd say, you know, he just doesn't really care about me. He always has other things that are more important. He just doesn't spend any time with me. Then finally she decides to marry him. And I remember right before the wedding, a week or two before the wedding, she met with me and she said, I just don't know if I want to marry him. What's the matter? Oh, he never wants to spend any time. Same story she would tell me for 10 years. And I said, well, you've known this for 10 years. Why are you getting married? She said, well, it's already advertised, and all of our family's already coming. It's just been 2 weeks. They've already bought their tickets. They'll be so disappointed. I said, they'll be a lot more disappointed if you get divorced. And 2 weeks after she got married, she left him. And she met with me again. Why did you leave him? Oh, he never wants to spend any time with me. You knew this already. He said, yeah, but somehow when I lived with it, it was unbearable. So she knew exactly what to do. My point is, she knew what to do. She knew what to do. She knew this is not favorable for me. But she didn't have the courage to do it. So sometimes we just don't know what to do. Sometimes we're just bewildered. You know, what do I do? And other times we know what to do, but somehow we're creeping it. We're Prabhupada that quotes these verses about the creeping of verses of Ramadan. We're miserly in the sense that we're not using our intelligence. So a miser is someone who has resources, but they don't use them. You know, recently there was a headline of some man who donated in his will, when he died, millions of dollars to a hospital and millions more to a library. And nobody guessed during this man's life that he was wealthy. If his coat was falling apart, he would safety pin it together. You know, during this, he just didn't spend any money. There's one story in the Bhagavatam, the 11th canto, of this Brahmana who was so miserly, he wouldn't spend money even on his own eating. You know, he was very rich, but he wouldn't spend money on his own food, on his own clothes. He wouldn't take care of his family. So some people like to just look at money. Oh, look, I have so much money in the bank. But money is for spending. Money isn't just for looking at. Of course, it's good to save money also. But that you save all of your money. So intelligence and human life is also for using. So sometimes we don't make the right decisions, not because we lack the intelligence, but because we're not using our intelligence. Right? Sometimes a person may not get good medical care because they don't have the money, but someone else may have the money, they just don't want to spend it. So this is the kripana. This is usually our two situations that we're in. Either we just genuinely don't know what to do, or we know what to do, but we lack the courage to spend our energy and our resources and our intelligence to do what we know is the right thing to do in order to achieve this stress. So in this situation, one has to take shelter of some guide. And this is everybody. Everybody is in a situation either where they don't know what to do or they don't have the courage to do the right thing. Who is there who can say, I always know exactly what to do, and I always have the courage to do it? Who's willing to say that? So we need some guide. So who are we going to go to as a guide? So the best guide, of course, is God. That is the best guide. Why? Because he knows everything. I can only see a little bit ahead of me. I can't see the whole picture. I don't really understand the reactions to my activities. And I don't really understand the consequences of my activities. I'm just reading this in one of Bhakti Nortekar's songs. He said, I've done so many things, and I was thinking I wouldn't have to pay the consequences. You know, people smoke and they think, someone else will get cancer, not me. Right? I won't have to pay the consequences. But God can see. Krishna, who's the Supreme Personality of God, and he can understand, especially the Shreyas, what is the long-term effect. One time the devotees were arguing with Srila Prabhupada, can God see the future? If God can see the future, it means he has no free will, that we have no free will. Prabhupada said, no. He said, just like a man sitting on a tree branch and sawing the branch off the tree. And some other people came by and said, my dear sir, if you do this, you're going to fall down. You're cutting off the branch you're sitting on, you will fall down. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. He keeps on. And he falls down and he says, oh, you must be great astrologers. And Prabhupada said, Krishna knows the future like that. And Krishna knows, you do this, this will happen. You do this, this will happen. You do this, this will happen. So he can give us proper guidance. But then we have another problem. How am I going to hear him? He's in my heart, Ishwar Sarvabhutan Everyday Sharjan, just Ramayana Sarvabhutani, Yantramirani Maya. It's really Krishna who's directing me through all of my wanderings on my bodily machine. But it's very hard to hear him directly. Of course, why don't I hear him directly? Is that his fault? He's not speaking loudly enough, or he's not speaking clearly enough, or why don't we hear him? We're in illusion. We don't want to hear. We don't want to hear. Sometimes you see a child that gets angry. You know, you try to give them instruction and they put their hands over their ears and they say, I don't hear you. You ever seen children do that?
Yeah.
Sometimes you can see adults do that when they're having an argument. One adult says, I'm not listening to anything you're saying. So we have this rebellious attitude towards Krishna, and our attitude is, I'm not listening to you. You know, we have this sort of, dichotomy, that on the one hand we're saying, please, Lord, tell me what to do, and then, no, I'm not listening to you. I'm sure we all have this experience that somebody asks us for advice, and we're given advice, they become angry, but they say, I'm not going to listen to you. Have we all had this experience? So this is the experience that Krishna is having as a super soul. But what is Krishna going to do? If there's some soul saying, I don't want to listen to God, go away, but help me. If some soul is saying, go from this, so what will Krishna do? Krishna sends the spiritual master. Guru Krishna Prasadipaya Bhakti Lata Yuja. Krishna sends somebody that's a little harder to ignore. We send somebody who's in a physical body, who comes on the same planet at the same time, and can walk up to you and say to you, this is the proper path. Now, interestingly enough, Srila Prabhupada says the spiritual master is not a particular man. He says the spiritual master is the principle. The spiritual master is the truth. And anyone who's presenting that truth, that person is a spiritual master. So the real spiritual master is Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda. They are actually the spiritual master. And anybody, any jiva we call spiritual master is somebody who's transmitting their message. Prabhupada compared the guru to a postal carrier. You know, the letter's been written by somebody else, and the postal carrier is delivering it to you. Of course, the jiva who's the spiritual master has to have the compassion and the intelligence to know how to give you instructions in a way that you'll be able to accept them and for your particular circumstance. I was just hearing this morning, Prabhupada was saying it's the duty of the spiritual master to engage each disciple according to their particular talents. So like here, Krishna is telling Arjuna, get up and fight. But are we going to tell everybody to get up and fight? Is that particular instruction relevant to everybody? Okay, all of you, go out of here and fight. Yeah. Imagine in all of our Hare Krishna temples, it's just a big wrestling match, you know, a boxing match. So that was because Arjuna was in a very particular circumstance. The principles there of surrender to the Supreme, but the details are going to change. So the spiritual master is the jiva who comes and says, okay, here's the principle that will make you happy, and here's how you have to apply it in your own life. And of course, the instructions of the spiritual master generally will even change in details over your life. Right? So maybe, you know, when you're 20, 25, the guru says you should get married. When you're 50, the guru says you should renounce. You know, a certain time the guru may say you should be a pujari. Another time the guru may say you should start a business, even to the same person. So the guru is taking the basic principles and then tailor-making the instructions for the individual. And the guru is somebody who's supposed to be a transparent via media to Krishna. That you see Krishna through the guru, just like you get the letter through the postal carrier. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, if anyone says, I am guru, then they are guru, they are a cow. And they're just a fool. If someone thinks, I am guru. No, only Krishna is the guru. Only Krishna is the Guru. So the Guru has responsibility to transmit the truth. How are you going to find your ultimate benefit? According to time, place, and circumstance, and the needs of the disciple. And the disciple then has the responsibility of opening their ears. I think there's very few things more frustrating than somebody saying, please help me, and you go to help them, and they say, no, forget it. You know, there's very few things more frustrating. Please come and help me. Okay, here I am. I'm ready to help you. Oh, forget it. I don't want to. So it's the duty of your disciple. And here, Arjuna said, Prapanna, I'm surrendering to you. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm not going to argue. Of course, not going to argue doesn't mean that Arjuna doesn't use his intelligence. Arjuna asked some very heavy questions. Like Arjuna says, wait a minute, you know, you tell me to keep all abominable activities far distant and practice the yoga of intelligence, and then you're telling me to fight this ghastly warfare. Well, that doesn't match up. I don't understand it. Or you're telling me you spoke this knowledge to the sun god millions of years ago, but, you know, we're the same age, Krishna. You're not millions of years old. How are you telling me this? So Arjuna asks these kinds of questions. At the same time, Arjuna's not asking these questions in a challenging or disrespectful spirit. He's asking these questions in the mood of really wanting to know. And for most people in the world, even admitting that they need help seems to be very difficult. Most people in the world say, I already know. I'm not perplexed. The Prabhupada gives the example of a forest fire. The forest fire starts without anyone setting it. So you can say to people who say, I already know, say, have there been any forest fires in your life that happened without you setting them? There are any catastrophes that happened in your life that you just didn't know where they came from? And most people would have to say, well, yeah, you know, there happened. But so most people are not willing to admit, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Or I know what to do, but I don't have the courage to do the right thing. And of all those people, thank you. Manusinam sahasra shri kashtu devati siddhaya yathatam api siddhanam kashtunam vekitatvaja. Out of many, 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 many thousands, there'll be one who'll say, you know, I really don't have it all together. I really don't. I really don't know what to do. And even when I know what to do, I can't seem to do it. Help! You know? Help. When I was meditating on the Sirius, I was remembering that old song by the Beatles, you know. When I was younger, I didn't need anybody's help. And now I'm now older. Now I realize that I need some help. So most people think I don't need any help. Then of all the people who think I need help, we have to say frankly, most of them don't really want it. They sort of want help. They want help only if you give them the answer that they want to hear. But as soon as you give them an answer they don't want to hear, they don't want you helping them. But they're not really open. They're not really surrendered. I mean, I had one devotee many, many years ago come to me and say, Ermita, what's my biggest problem? So having had a lot of experience with this devotee, I said, you don't have any problems. And she kept insisting and insisting and insisting. And so after a while, against my better judgment, I said, well, I don't think you have any big problem. You only have a small problem. And then here's your small problem. And for the next 3 weeks, she was calling me and emailing me and yelling at me. How dare you say this is my problem? Well, because you asked. And after a while, you learn that most of the time when people ask, they really don't want to know. We had this situation also as an editor. So I'm an editor for Back to Godhead magazine, and I was trained by Jai Dwaitaswami, I don't know what you mean. So, you know, he really cuts with a sharp knife. And when people send an article in for publication, you can't just publish something in Back to Godhead just because the person likes what they wrote. You know, the official Hare Krishna magazines. You can't put something in there that's not philosophically right or that's poor writing or something like that. You have to have reasonably high standards. But people write an article and they love it. It's kind of like their baby. It's something like going to someone saying, ooh, your baby looks like a little pig. You can tell people, they can't handle it. And so if you say to somebody, well, you know, this isn't really right for our work. Even if you said, you know, this is a beautiful piece of writing, it just doesn't fit our audience. I've had this experience, you say that to people, and then they say, well, I'm never going to write for Back to Godhead again. All you do is discourage me. But we even had one time when a devotee wrote a piece that we thought was great. We wanted him to change two sentences in it. We didn't hear from him again for months, and then I saw him on the temple. I said, Prabhu, we're waiting for you just to fix those couple of sentences. And he said, ah, you guys are just completely discouraging. So when I have this experience, even people say sometimes, you know, will you edit my book? Will you give me feedback on my article? And you do, and they just become angry. When you say, well, this thing, I don't understand this. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not written clearly. And this is just too long. And this is redundant. And they just become angry. And so you have to ask them for a first practice to sign a contract, you know? Well, if I'm really heavy with you and I tell you something, you know, really severely that needs to be changed, you know, are you willing to change it? And generally the answer is going to be no. You know, people ask me a lot to visit schools and give a critique, but I find they don't generally want a critique. Yeah, I was at one school, not here, another country, and they asked me, please visit the school and give a critique. I said, are you sure? A critique?
Yeah.
Well, to go in as a professional and say this needs to be fixed and this is good and this is bad and this is neutral, to give a whole evaluation. So I said, are you sure you want me to do that? Oh, yes. And then afterwards you sit down and you say, well, you know, okay, this is great and this is a mess. What do you mean it's a mess? So the unfortunate reality is that even those of us who start off admitting that we need help, and we start off admitting that we're perplexed, and we start off admitting that we really need guidance in spiritual life, we're generally not willing to take it. It's rare if you talk to any of the gurus in our Hare Krishna movement and you say, so can you just honestly tell all your disciples what they need to hear? They'll say, no way. You know, they'll probably just pick up and leave. We have this big false ego, right, guarding our real anarthas, like some big dog, you know, a great big guard dog. Don't you come near any of my anarthas. I'm already perfect, powerful, and happy. Ishwar, humble, Siddhanta. I don't have any problems. And even if you say to your devotee, you know, you have this problem. What do you mean I have this problem? Why don't I have this problem? So it's very, very, very rare that a person will surrender. And a person will really say, okay, I'm ready to deal with my problems. Here, Arjuna is saying that I'm a miser, karpanya, dosha, I'm full of faults. And he really means it. He's not just saying, oh, I have so many problems, please help me. But he's willing to listen. So this needs to be there, this willingness of the guru, the potency of the guru to be in line with the truth, and the willingness of the disciple to hear the truth. Now Krishna is the perfect guru at the end of Bhagavad Gita. He says to Arjuna, so are your illusions now dispelled? And Prabhupada says, if Arjuna had said, no, I still have problems, then Krishna would have repeated the whole Bhagavad Gita if necessary. Krishna would have worked with him. And work with him, and work with him, and work with him until he reached perfection. And Arjuna was going to be open and open and open until he reached perfection also. It was a reciprocation between the disciple and the guru. And again, we want to emphasize this surrender doesn't mean not asking questions. He's saying, Pritcham, I have my questions. Please answer my questions. And in the fourth chapter, Krishna says, right? Tadvini pranipate na prati prashtina sevya upadiksham titikanyam gyanyasa doshi. Prashtina, one should ask questions. So being submissive to the guru doesn't mean that if you don't understand or it doesn't make sense to you or you can't apply it, that you just say, okay. It doesn't mean a blind following. Prabhupada said blind following is condemned. But it means the willingness to be open to hear things, even if they're very painful, even if they're very difficult, even if they really attack the false ego, and the willingness to ask questions if things are not clear, until they're completely clear. Now, another significant thing here is that Arjuna and Krishna have been friends. Indeed, they're eternally friends. And later on in the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, text 3, Krishna will say, Bhaktosi me sakacheti, because you are my devotee and my friend, therefore I'm telling you this science. At the same time, Prabhupada says, when Arjuna becomes a disciple, he's giving up friendly talks. With friendly talks, we're all equal. Now, we're talking with friends. Your friends may give you some advice, but you don't feel any compulsion to follow their advice. But when you accept someone as a guru, then you're saying, okay, I'm going to follow your advice. It's a different kind of relationship. It's more like a parental relationship than a friendly relationship. One is taking the position of being superior, and one is taking the position of being subordinate. At the same time, that doesn't mean that the guru is not a friend. In the seventh canto of the Bhagavad Gita, it says that one should serve the guru with great love. And Prabhupada, commenting on that, says, why would one give up control of one's life to another person unless you really felt that that person was your friend and they had your best interest in heart? Right? Who are the people that we listen to? We listen to people of two things. First of all, they're expert. We already talked about that the guru is expert. The guru has to be a transparent Vaya media to Krishna. The guru is basically a way for the rebellious soul to hear Krishna. And the guru has to be your well-wisher. If I'm expert but I don't like you, I may use my expert knowledge to hurt you. And if I like you but I'm not expert, I may give you the wrong knowledge because I don't know what I'm doing. So we want to listen to people who both are benevolent and expert. So this benevolence means that there is a relationship of trust, there's a relationship of caring, which we can say certainly includes a friendship. But it's not the kind of equal, casual friendship. The guru is not meant to be a buddy. You know, just some buddy you hang out with that maybe can suggest some things to you that you might consider. So Srila Prabhupada will often emphasize that anyone who wants the solution of the problems of life must accept a guru. There's no question of not accepting a guru. It's just not going to happen. How far can we solve the perplexities of life without the guidance of a spiritual master? I mean, if we're really honest, we have to say not very far. You know, we really can't see very far. How are you going to drive someplace without a map or without a GPS? You're just going to drive and hope you get to the right place. At least you have to use the star or something. Some kind of guidance. Right? So one must accept a guru. And how does one tell that one doesn't have a bona fide guru? Your perplexities of life start being solved. That's your evidence procedure. And in fact, one is supposed to test. The guru and disciple are supposed to test each other for 1 year, according to the Hari Bhakti laws, at least 1 year. And what are you testing? You're testing, are my perplexities of life being solved? And the guru is testing, are you really willing to listen? So these are the two things that are being tested. Is it working? And is the person listening? And of course, you look for a guru who's in a disciplined succession, you look for a guru who himself is exemplifying the principles they're talking about. You look for a guru who himself isn't lost. Pretty hard to find your way out of the maze with someone else who's also lost in the maze. But you want to see, do I start finding Shreyas? Do I start finding the ultimate good? We talked a lot about Syat, the ultimate good, right? Is there anything also? Yes. We talked about that also. Swasti, auspiciousness this morning. So one's life should become filled with auspiciousness. That doesn't mean you become rich and famous and etc. But your life becomes filled with real auspiciousness. So this is the very intelligent thing that Arjuna does in the Bhagavad Gita. This is a turning point in the Bhagavad Gita, in our story of the Bhagavad Gita. What Arjuna starts doing right. First he just has all these complaints, Right, it's just what we would say kvetching.
I'm this problem, I'm that problem, I'm this problem, I'm that problem. Nothing's good, nothing's going to work out.
Right, like he's going to say that also in the next verse. I have no means to drive away his grief. There's no answer, there's no solution. I can't find any solution, I'm lost, I'm hopeless. But now he does the right thing and he says, please, guide me. So, questions, comments? Yes?
I'm wondering, when you're talking to the guru, when you're looking for a guru, because sometimes devotees, it seems like they have this idea that the guru is your guru is already there for you, you just have to find it. It's like, not so much your personal effort, which guru you're going to choose.
Okay.
So then I'm wondering, is it like that, or is it you have to, like,
you know, this is sort of thing is very individual and personal. It's very hard to say something that applies to everyone. How different people will find their guru is very different. Now, of course, all of us in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we all have Srila Prabhupada as our guru, either Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru. But Srila Prabhupada is our preeminent guru for our Hare Krishna movement. It's his instructions that we're following. It's his mood that we're following. Yes? And everybody who's acting as a guru under Prabhupada's order, Prabhupada said, I want all of my disciples to be gurus. So here, all training, we're all supposed to be training. The disciples according to Srila Prabhupada's mood, just like Prabhupada's training his disciples according to Bhaktisiddhanta's mood. So if you come to this Hare Krishna movement, in one sense, you've already found your guru. You certainly already found your main Shiksha Guru. Then how will you find your other Guru? Well, usually the way that it works, usually the way one finds one's Shiksha Guru, Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto. It's nicely the GBC last year wrote this very wonderful in the resolution. That there's people who are giving you guidance in Krishna consciousness, and that guidance is helping you. And you'll probably have a number of people that are giving you guidance in your Krishna consciousness. And people that you come to trust, people that you come to understand, oh, this person is expert, and this person actually cares. And this is a person who's acting as a transparent mind media through which I can see Krishna. By being with this person, I can see Krishna. I remember one time going to a Bhagavatam class where I really felt that Krishna was manifesting in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Well, that's how one should feel. That here's somebody that by their association, by their instruction, Krishna manifests for me. They're acting like a window through which I can see Krishna. They're like, you know, somebody who hands you a telephone and says, here, you want to talk to them? It's like that. The guru is like the person who hands you the telephone. Hey, Krishna's on the line. He wants to talk to you. So you should find that in the Hare Krishna movement there are people in your life, probably more than one, with whom you have that kind of relationship. And over time, there may be one person that you particularly feel you have that kind of relationship with. And then you approach that person and say, may I take initiation? And the way things are right now in the Hare Krishna movement, that person will either have to already be approved by the GBC or go through the GBC approval process before they can give you initiation. So that's how it's supposed to work. Is that pretty simple? I mean, maybe it'll be some mystical thing. That's possible. It might be. There was one devotee in Fiji who was a Shiva worshiper, and he was a big lawyer, a big politician. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, the devotees bought the house next door to him. So being a lawyer, he was often working till late at night. He'd go to bed at like 2 in the morning. And the devotees decided that they were going to purify the whole neighborhood. So they put loudspeakers outside of their building. And they would broadcast Mangal Arti, or Arti, as you guys say here in Australia. Mangal Arti. They were going to broadcast Mangal Arti on their speakers. So this lawyer didn't exactly appreciate that. You know, he's falling into bed at 2 in the morning. And at 4:30, I had this experience in the Delhi temple once. I had flown into Delhi from America. My flight had gotten in at about 1 or 2 in the morning, and I'd been traveling for like 35 hours. And I had to make another flight to Calcutta that afternoon. So I thought, okay, I'll stay in the temple guest house and I'll get, you know, 6-7 hours of sleep, take some prasad, and catch my next flight. So I go to the guest house, fall asleep at about 2:30, and then 4:30 they were blasting again Mangalarti through the speakers all through the guest house. So that's what's happening to this guy, but it wasn't happening to him just one time, it was happening to him every single night. And he went to the devotees and he complained. And they wouldn't do anything about it. So because he was a very big person politically in the country, so a very wealthy person, he was taking out full-page advertisements in the papers denouncing the devotees and saying they should leave the country. And he started taking legal and political action against the devotees. So at one point, some devotees approached him and said, well, our leader, our GBC, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, is in town. Maybe you should come and talk to him. He said, okay. You know, so he sort of reluctantly agreed. And he went next door, and Maharaj made him wait for about 4 hours. Intentionally made him wait for about 4 hours. And finally he goes to see Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj could figure out this man's mentality. I heard this from this devotee himself. And he said, and Maharaj said to him, I'll tell you what, by the way, don't try this at home. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to him, I'll make a deal with you. You follow our whole practice of Krishna consciousness, 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, Mangalarti, offering your food, reading Bhagavatam, everything, for 1 month. At the end of 1 month, if you don't see that our process is real, we'll pack up and leave for you. If you see our process is real, then you write full-page apologies in the newspaper where you had all these advertisements and you drop the legal case against us. So the guy agreed. Something like the story of Sakshi Gopal, where the atheist son and the father and the young man Brahmana, they all agreed that if the deity came and bore witness, they would have to blame. And the atheist said, you know, Krishna will never come. This lawyer, after 2 weeks of following the process, he saw a big change in his life. And he could understand Krishna consciousness is real. So he went back to the temple, talked to Maharaj, right, and he followed all the conditions. And then he's thinking, I really need to accept the guru. If Krishna consciousness is real, I need to accept the guru. What am I going to do? So I've been a Shiva worshiper my whole life. So he really prayed to Lord Shiva, you know, what should I do, what should I do? And that night, Lord Shiva appeared to him in a dream and said, go take initiation from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So it may happen that way. It might be like that. Maybe Lord Shiva will appear to you and tell you who your guru is. But that's not the general, way that happens. Generally, whoever is your Shiksha guru, your dominant Shiksha guru, later on becomes the Diksha guru. They formalize, it's a formalization of an existing relationship that's had already testing that happens over a year. Anybody else? Yes?
Naturally, most of us, we go to someone and we ask their opinion because we really know what we intend to do and we are really open and willing to listen. So how do we, sometimes we have people who come to us and the same shape as we're going through their process and we also find in our life maybe we ask them some opinion from someone. So how do we stop them?
How do we stop this thing where we know what we should do and we don't have the courage to do it? And we keep getting the same instruction over and over again? You could ask Krishna for the courage. That's what Arjuna did. He said, Krishna, I'm being overcome by miserly weakness. Please help me. And be aware, if there's something that we know we should do and other people keep telling us to do, if we're sincere in our Krishna consciousness, that Krishna will make that instruction keep getting louder. That's what I see practically. So in other words, if there's something you already know in your heart that you should do and you're resisting it, you're resisting it, resisting it, and then somebody will come and tell you, excuse me, I really think you should do this, and you still don't listen, then after a while it'll probably be a group of people telling you. Then after a while, maybe the temple board telling you. And if you still don't listen, then you end up sometimes in some sort of a public scandal where, you know, the whole world knows. Or if you're really stubborn, Krishna may leave you alone for a while. Just like we would do. If somebody's really stubborn, they may just leave them alone for a while. Sometimes Krishna just leaves them alone and says, okay, let me know when you're ready, I'll come back and tell you. So why not just do it, you know? Why wait until Krishna has to make the message so loud and so uncomfortable for us? Because if we're saying, Krishna, please, please, give me your devotional service, please engage in your service, please destroy my universe. If we're saying that, and we mean that with some sincerity, then he'll keep trying. So why do we want to resist him with the other hand? Like a naked devotional would have run around his friends, tell her, if you've already sold the elephant, don't argue over the price of the goat. If you've already given yourself to Krishna, don't be arguing with him about some little attachment that you have. How ridiculous. Yes, Mom.
Is that sort of procrastinating sort of attitude not agreement?
Yes, definitely. Maybe a little passion too, but mostly it's more agreement, yes. It's fear. Yes.
Yeah, just another point, I need to say fear, because you've mentioned a few times, you've used some of the word, you've used the word courage, that there's a lack of courage to perhaps do the right thing, or to surrender, or whatever it is. So I was wondering if you could speak about a little bit more about that, specifically
Well, it's interesting that of all of the vices, cowardice is the one that even the demons hate. So demons are proud of their lust and anger and envy and greed. Frankly, they are. But nobody's ever proud of their cowardice. There's no human society or group of people that revere cowardice. It's quite fascinating. So cowardice means a time when courage is required. When facing fears and going on despite your fears required, and you don't do it out of a desire for self-preservation, where you put your own comfort, your own life, your own desires, that's what cowardice means, your own wants, over some sacrifice that's actually required for your good and for the good of the world. Well, this is something that's very much compared to miserliness. And this is exactly what holds us back. This is what pushes us to do the wrong thing when we know what the right thing is to do. And so how do we get courage? Well, there's several ways you get courage. You know, the name for courage would be faith, frankly. Trust. So how do you get that? Well, first of all, it helps if you associate with people who have it. They'll encourage you to be courageous. They'll encourage you to do the right thing regardless of your fears. They'll encourage you to face your fears and go through them. And you see that they've done that. And the other way is to experience. That you do something courageous in Krishna service. I mean, for many of us, just putting on tilak and putting on neck beads and shaving our head was an act of courage. And you see that life goes on. You know, your life doesn't fall apart. You don't lose everything. Correct? And then you take another step, and you take another step, and you take another step, and you take another step. Finally, you get ready to take the big jump and give up your ahankara, give up your... Is that right?
Yeah, I'm I was thinking, you know, about all the different causes of action or all the causes of inaction. And I was also thinking that I think a lot of the time people fail to, pick up the scriptures, or they fail to act on the scriptures because somewhere in their own consciousness they cannot see the relevance of that wisdom, of that knowledge, to their own circumstances and how it will actually relieve them from.
Oh, that is so beautifully put. Because one of the main ways that we associate with people who have faith is through the scripture. It's one of our main means of association. And often it's just a regular reading and a regular hearing that gives us the faith and the courage to go on and do what we know needs to be done. And we know is the right thing. Thank you. That was really beautiful. Yes?
It seems to me that we're all in the same position as Arjuna.
More or less, yeah.
And we have to become great warriors to defeat everything we're talking about. All the doubts, all the anomalies, we have to push through and become a warrior.
Yes.
Yes. And then,
definitely.
In a nutshell, I don't want to oversimplify it, but I mean, we need to hear this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting about you saying that as an analogy is our anarchists, we often think of our friends and family.
Yeah.
We like our anarchists. You know, like Krishna says in the 16th chapter, Kama Ashrita, the demons take shelter of lust. He also says Ahankara Ashrita. You know, our family is our shelter. Like Prabhupada says in his purport, you know, that the miser thinks, I'm going to be God for my family, or my family's going to be God for me. So we think that our lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, these are going to protect me. This is my friends. And yes, we have to go on the battlefield and fight them. And to know they're not really our friends. Thank you. So well put. Yes?
If our family are Krishna conscious, should we kill them, so to speak? We don't want them to do it.
Well, as far as our physical family in this world, no. Generally not. Prabhupada told my father, and my father in 1974, my father said, I'm not coming to the temple to see Krishna, I'm coming to see my daughter and son-in-law, is that all right? And Prabhupada said, yes, they are loving Krishna and you are loving them, so two things equal to the same thing we do to each other. So generally the way we deal with our family is we get them to be attached to us. And somehow we get them to be attached to us with some connection with Krishna. Generally how we should deal with our family. Because it says the devotees, they liberate so many generations. And this is said when the Singhadeva says to Balaram, and he was 14 or 21, I can't remember, generations of your family have been liberated. And Prabhupada in that purport there said, that can't all be for one lifetime. He said, because we don't know so many generations in one lifetime. So it has to be for many lifetimes, because it can only be people that we know. In other words, this liberation of the family is due to attachment. Like Prabhupada will say, if a woman happens to get a husband who's a Mahabharata devotee, then just by her ordinary wifely duties, she'll become a pure devotee. If you happen to get a child, you happen to get a husband, you happen to get a parent who's a great devotee, you're just doing your ordinary material duties, and your attachment to that person becomes transformed into spiritual love. So that's what we're going to do to our family. Yeah, if we send them all away, how will we benefit? Yes?
I just wanted to ask that. I'm not initiated, and I was wondering if you're not initiated, are you making any progress at all? Like,
if I'm chanting, if I'm going
for Harinam and books and just doing service for Krishna, are you making any progress at all? Or do you need a guru to progress?
So there are some places where Prabhupada says some very heavy things about that.
Yeah.
He'll say, without being initiated, the connection with Krishna is not actually established. But the Hari Bhakti Vilas says that guru and disciple must test each other for a year. So does that mean, at least a year, so does that mean that Shastra is saying to people, you can't make any spiritual progress for that year? You have to wait that year and not make any progress? So you can compare initiation to enrolling in a college, probably compares it to that. So until you officially enroll in a college or university, you're not a student of that college or university. Does that mean you can't get any knowledge? You can still get some knowledge. I'm sure you can still, Prabhupada talks about sitting in on classes and auditing classes. But can you get the full benefit of that university without being an enrolled student? Not even. It's when you're an enrolled student, you get your ID card, you get access to the library, all the rest of the professors in the university will help you because you're an official student. And then they're making a promise to you. They're saying to you, if you go to the classes, you follow the rules, you attend, you will graduate. Whereas if you're just auditing the classes, there's no contract. You're not making a contract and they're not making a contract. But can you learn something? Of course you can learn something. And in many colleges and universities, once you enroll, you can get credit for prior knowledge. So a lot of universities, if you say, well, I already know this subject, you can take an exam, and you pass the exam, you don't have to take the course. So it's explained that in Krishna consciousness, whatever advancement you made in a previous life, you pick up from that point. And the same, you can make a lot of advancement before you initiate. But initiation is a contract. This is just like we say people should get married. There's many reasons why people should get married. But one of the reasons is that without that, how is there love? If I say, I love you, I love you, I love you, but I'm not making a contract that I'm going to stick around, then as soon as you burn the lasagna, I may be leave. Okay? But the marriage is supposed to mean, who knows what the world means nowadays, but what it's supposed to mean is, I'm sticking around. I mean, notwithstanding something very unusual. You know, if it turns out that your wife is a serial killer or something. But, you know, under normal circumstances, it means I'm sticking around. If the day after the wedding you get a car accident and you have burns over 90% of your body and you're ugly in a wheelchair for the rest of your life, I'm still sticking around. So initiation means the disciple and the guru say, I'm sticking around. The guru says, I'm going to take responsibility for you. And the disciple says, I'm going to listen to you. So you're formalizing the relationship. How much help are you going to give to somebody who doesn't formalize the relationship with you? Yeah, there is usually a limit. So initiation is supposed to be, again, it often isn't, but it's supposed to be a formal declaration. My dear spiritual master, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to take your instructions seriously. And the guru is saying, I'm going to take responsibility for you. And that's establishing a firm relationship with Krishna. It's also saying to Krishna, Krishna, I'm hanging around. Like one of my god sisters told me very early on, she said, stay in the boat. She said, there's going to be storms and you may get seasick, but stay in the boat. So initiation is saying, I'm going to stay in the boat. Without that, it's kind of like, well, I'm going to check it out. So if my attitude is, I'm going to check it out, then Krishna's attitude is, okay, I'm going to check you out too. Yeah, come on, Prabhupada. So Krishna responds to us. Now that's general, the holy name, the power of the holy name does not wait for initiation. The power of the holy name is there. The power of the Dham is there. The power of Prasad is there. But when we make that commitment, Krishna is reciprocating that. He also makes a commitment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like marriage, you know, you marry somebody. It's not that there's no relationship before marriage. Even in the days of arranged marriage, it wasn't that the marriage was arranged and 2 seconds later they got married. There was some interval between the time they made the arrangement and planning the wedding, correct? There was some interval, at least a few weeks or something.
Yeah, so they can get to know each other.
Well, even in the days when people didn't get to know each other, even in the days when there was just an arranged marriage and that nobody got to know each other until they were at the wedding day. But there was still some kind of relationship going on. There was some negotiations between the family. There was some planning. That wasn't nothing. It wasn't that nothing was going on. Although when Silva's actually wedding, the relationship isn't formalized, isn't finalized. You can call off the wedding, you know, up to an hour before the wedding. You understand what I'm saying? Or you think about a theatrical production. So when does it start? Does a theatrical production start when you write the script? Does it start when you have a casting call? Does it start when you have rehearsals? Or does it start on the day the curtain opens and you perform? You know, when does it start? So it's at many points that it starts. But as soon as one says, "My dear Lord, from this day on I am yours," Krishna says from that moment, that person is under my personal protection. And as soon as you say one time, Krishna, as soon as you one time take your sarana, immediately you start making amends. Is that all right? Yes, please.
It seems like there's a bit of a danger that if one devotee's been around for a fair while in Krishna consciousness, it may start to think that he knows the philosophy reasonably well, so therefore he doesn't really make inquiries from Guru or spiritual master. Whereas probably, you know, it seems like maybe as you go on further in Krishna consciousness, you know, you need a spiritual master more, because there's that chance of becoming a crowd as you've been around for many, many years like that.
Very good point. You may need a spiritual master in a different way for different kinds of questions. You know, the nature of the questions are going to change. But we find in the Shastra and the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, the most advanced persons are still engaged in questions and answers. Mahaprabhu was asking questions of Ramananda Roy. You can't get any more advanced than Mahaprabhu, he's God. But he's asking questions of Ramananda Roy just to relish. Thank you. That was wonderful. Anybody else? Thank you very much. Yes, do you have a question?
How can we properly interact with the spiritual master? I mean, practically speaking, in ISKCON, it's not like we get a book that says you will write a letter and it will say this, and this is the correct way to speak or the correct way to behave, or the correct, like, we just try to be humble or honest or respectful, but how do we actually know, like...
Ooh, that is a much bigger question than I think I can answer in the remaining, like, 7 minutes. I know that there's now an official disciple course, and part of what's covered in the disciple course is this sort of thing. What is the proper etiquette between the guru and the disciples? It's one of the main topics of the disciple course. There certainly are places in the Shastra where the ideal disciple is described, both in terms of an example of an ideal disciple. Here we have Arjuna is a good example of an ideal disciple. We have, of course, Vidura also, and Uddhava with Krishna. And then we have sometimes explanations given, for example, in the seventh canto, what is the brahmachari supposed to behave like? You know, what is the student supposed to behave like? But then, of course, it comes down to individual personal relationships. And it really depends also on you as an individual and the guru as an individual. You know, are you the kind of disciple that's traveling all over the world with your guru and washing your guru's clothing and cooking your guru's meals? Or are you the kind of disciple that sees your guru once every 2 years and is meditating on just following your instructions and connecting with him that way? I mean, then that's going to be a very different kind of relationship, how you're going to deal with them. As far as, you know, becoming humble, that's a whole other seminar, my dear. How to become humble. I could say in one word, humility means honesty. It means you're being willing to be authentic. Being willing to be really authentic. I am not the center of the universe. I never was the center of the universe. I never will be the center of the universe. My importance in it is that Krishna loves me. My importance is that I'm doing so many great and wonderful things in the world. No matter how much I know, no matter how much realization I have, I'm always a beginner because there's always so much more to do. So this is just honesty. That's just the truth. Being humble doesn't mean I hate myself or something. it's basically just acknowledging and living according to what's real. You know, what's real is I'm an extremely insignificant speck whose importance is in Krishna's love for me. I don't have any, some sort of importance otherwise. It's not that if I was in the body of a tree for 10,000 years, then anything would be adversely affected. The whole universe would go on just fine. If I had a blade of grass body for billions and billions of years, it just wouldn't make any difference. So that's just the truth. And acting according to that truth, that I don't know, that what do I know? Even if I know so much, it's just a tiny speck of dust of what there is to know. That's sort of humility in a nutshell. It's very, humility is very liberating. I don't have to pretend that I'm some big important person who really matters to the world, and that everything I do is so significant, and that everything's about me. Does that make sense?
I was also meaning about how to serve the spiritual master. Obviously,
well, that depends on how the spiritual master wants to be served. That's a very individual thing. And it depends on you as an individual, on your particular relationship with your individual spiritual master. That you... You can't make some sort of a rule that applies to everybody. So, we're each individual, so we each like different things and don't like different things. That's why it's explained in Nectar Devotion, the principles to serve the guru, but the details of how to serve the guru will change. And they will even change from one time to another. So, how it may be pleasing to serve the guru on Monday may not be the same on Tuesday. Of course, the general way to serve the guru is to fall in love with Krishna. That's really what the guru is interested in. The guru is not so much interested in, you know, whether or not you make chapatis for him or something like that. What the guru really wants to see, just like what you want to see for your children. Their mother is a guru to the children. What do you want to see for your children? What's the best service your children can do for you? I mean, you might be happy if they give you a cup of water when you're thirsty, but that's not the real thing you're looking for, you follow? Certainly you want them to be polite, you don't want them to be rude and nasty and disrespectful. But again, that's not the main thing you're looking for. The main thing you're looking for is that they achieve spiritual happiness and spiritual realization, yes? Yes? Isn't that what you're looking for? So the main service your children can do for you is that they become successful in their life and their Krishna consciousness. And that's the main service the disciple can do for the guru. When the disciple says to the guru, you know, I remember Giri Rajaswami telling me that there was this kirtan and he was just relishing it so much. And he went up to Prabhupada, gave him the kirtan, and he said, Srila Prabhupada.
This Hare Krishna, it's fine. He said, it's fine. It's fine. He said, Srila Prabhupada, this Hare Krishna mantra is so wonderful. And Prabhupada said, oh, thank you very much. Now that's the main service that we need to do for our guru. We have to end the class in 2 seconds. Would you like the mic, Warren? Is that exciting? Is that reasonable? That's the main service you do. Like Prabhupada was asking at Lenta, what pleases you the most? And he said, if you love Krishna. If the guru sees that you love Krishna, even if you never give the guru any money, you never give the guru any food, you never give the guru any anything. And the guru sees all. You've given up your false ego and you've fallen in love with Krishna. Then your guru will be very happy. Is that all right? And if on top of that you do something nice for Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan Mission, then your guru will be doubly happy. It's alright? Is that okay? Simple. You don't have to make it complicated. Prabhupada ki jai.